All right, guys, thank you all for being here. I'm Josh with Evoke Bike, coach there. Why don't we go around and you guys can all kind of introduce yourself and how you know each other and your Zwift interactions.
Come on,
Who
Alex.
starts? Who starts first? Me? Why me? Okay. Yeah, I mean, I'm a coach at Evoke. You know me from the previous podcast and just like from social media. I met up with this ginger-looking fellow below me a few years back when COVID hit. Started doing Zwift races together and built a friendship, and here we are today. Like, then we got into DSing together, racing, and that's how we met Patrick and Tom and raced on the same team. And yeah, somehow we managed to be on the top of Zwift racing for a good year and a half.
I think some of those riders still are.
Yeah.
So I own a bike shop, and about I joined on Swift. I joined the KRT Kiss Racing Team, and used to lead the Kiss at Base 3 days a week for about, I can't remember, Alex, how many years? Three?
More, I think 5 years.
Really? Oh my word.
I mean,
And then,
just to like put in context, like Russ was one of the initial sponsors for Nathan Guerra's sponsor, Nathan Guerra's stream. So if you ever followed like the Zwift community live that streams races, Russ was one of the sponsors like years ago.
yeah, that was a long time ago. Long time ago. Yeah, and then we sort of put a team together. And I would usually DS, sometimes jump in. Alex would DS and sometimes jump in. And then we just scream at Tom and the rest of his teammates, which at the time, if they were going hard with the puke bucket next to them, I think they weren't enjoying it. But the banter after was so good. And that's what it's all about. It's like, I know these guys take Swift racing so serious at the top end, but you've got to keep it fun. As soon as it doesn't become fun, just forget about it because it will mess with you. You know, looking at the numbers, like I'm glad Swift took off the live weigh-ins like 2, 3 hours before you raced, because that was causing so many issues with so many athletes. So they got rid of that, which I think is a good thing. So,
I got so much I want to jump into that, but I want to hear, Tom, why don't you introduce yourself first?
yeah. So I'm Tom Thrall. I'm a Canadian that's based out of the U.S. right now. Currently racing for Next, powered by Ensured. You can see by the hat, got a rep. Yeah, I got into Zwift. I guess would have been. Actually, I probably signed up really late 2019, so it's coming up on really 2 full years on the platform right about now, when I had moved back from Singapore. So I was living in Singapore. I had just finished my first year of road racing, really successful season, and got relocated for work from Singapore back to Canada, and wanted to keep riding. So I first thing I did, bought an indoor trainer, signed up for Zwift, and and actually didn't really get serious into it for a while because I wasn't sold on the platform, really wasn't sold on the whole indoor thing just yet. But really took off once I relocated. So at that point, had moved then to the US a couple months later, took a little bit of a hiatus from cycling. And that was right around the time where kind of the pandemic started, and we were in full kind of lockdown mode and had no choice but to use Zwift. So that's really where kind of it all started. Within a couple months, I got connected with Patrick Wally, and we actually met out on the road, and he told me about the Zwift team that they were kind of ramping up, and kind of hopped in right before the first Premier League season last September, and then just kind of all exploded from there. So that's when Zwift kind of became my life and everything I do. But yeah, right now racing for Next, and powered by Ensured, And yeah, having a blast. We're about to finish off a great season, and yeah, looking forward to whatever's next with esports and Zwift. So
awesome. And I've Alex has mentioned this a few times. I think that you're ranked pretty high in the Zwift rankings currently.
I believe currently number one, maybe number two, but
number one as of recently.
That's amazing, man.
I didn't know that, Tom.
What's up, Patrick? How's it going?
Hey guys, I'm trying to get my headphone situation started. Bear with me. How you guys doing?
We're doing well. We just did some introductions. Russ mentioned something I kind of wanted to jump in a bit deeper on was the weigh-ins, because this is something I don't know if a lot of people, like, unless you're racing competitively on Zwift, people maybe don't understand that process. So, and I guess it's changed. So do you guys kind of want to go into how that works and I guess how it's changed over, over time?
Whatever do you want to do.
Yeah.
Where do you want to start?
Well, yeah, let's start with the process of the weighing. So it's stressful. And that's where, what would you say? Over the period of the weigh-ins, over the season of the racing, it affected so many athletes in such a negative way. And
I would say take a step back. I think going to the game itself, it's so heavily weight dependent that likely is why it kind of drives that kind of behavior and makes it so stressful. So kind of for those, again, everyone I'm assuming watching this, interested in this, has some interest in Zwift, but compared to outdoor riding, the game uses an algorithm that uses watts per kilogram. So your weight, your power over your weight, and ultimately favors that much more than what it would account to or benefit you outside. So indoors is a much, I totally screwed that up. But basically, the weight is much more of a factor inside. So when having a weigh-in for a game, every ounce, kilogram makes a huge difference in terms of gameplay.
Yeah, it does. But just like the difference here is like people obsess over it. But let's use me and you. Like me and you are pretty much the same height and same weight. So if you look, this is like, Russ knows this, Tom knows this, and Patrick also knows this. So I used to work for a website called Zwift Power, which is the analytical website that runs over races, do recordings, et cetera, et cetera. I got onto the website with Dave Ranson and James Hodges, who are the initial crew, and I had a few discussions with James. The game favors riders between 67 and 75 kilos in a height range between 170 to 180 centimeters. So me and Tom like basically fall into that, let's call it sweet spot.
So I'm screwed. Sorry, Alex.
Yeah, you are. Basically, you're small and you're light. that's why, like, you see why taller riders tend to manipulate or just like go into extremes with weigh-ins. Or on the other point of view, why lighter riders have such a stressful time in racing, you know? Because it's like Tom mentioned, it's not like in real life racing where you can use the draft or you can use other people around you. It's so heavily weight dependent. So, but it all seems to be around that sweet spot. So like 67 to about 75 kilos is that perfect spot to be in, like as we see. And because if you look at the winners, like last Premier Division, the current Premier Division, riders tend to be in that weight range.
Now, is that universal or is that across like Zwift as a platform, or is it sometimes
platform?
Okay, I was wondering if it was course specific.
Yeah,
platform.
At the heart of the race, it's a sprinter's race. And you need peak watts, and you know, riders in that sort of size range tend to have that peak power, but also have that balance of they're just light enough, you know, but they're strong enough and they have that just pure power, just enough that they can be effective at the final, because it's a very, very, very frequently, at least a small or a reduced bunch sprint. And I mean, I guess historically, if you want to talk about the history of the weigh-in, because I think a lot of people who just right outside don't know this, there used to be a website called, it was Zwift Transparency or Trent.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was a community run Facebook page that people could volunteer to say like, hey, look, by the way, like I am trying to do this legit. So they weigh in before a race. The rules were much looser. And then Zwift kind of, when they created the Premier division and to just continually make it more fair, they added a 24-hour weigh-in and they decided, I guess, third season last year, they changed it to a 2 hour before, because they're trying to find, and you know, there was a lot of back and forth between riders and managers and the race management about what was the best way to do it. They settled on it. That's what Zada settled on. So now it's a 2 hour weigh-in, which I don't know if it makes it better or worse. It's still just a weigh-in. And you know, you just have to plan accordingly for you to weigh in. That's how it works.
I mean, if you look at it from this point of view, in both ways, it's stressful, because if you have 34 hours, then you can like really dehydrate yourself. And technically, if your nutrition is good, and you know how to fuel, you can be a kilo or two heavier on race day. So, but 2 hours before the race. So let's say for you guys in the States, it's a bit easier because the races tend to be around midday to morning time. But for us in Europe, like it's, for me personally, it's 8 p.m., 9 p.m. in the evening. So like it's...
Yeah. So you eat all day long and it's like your weight fluctuates all day. So it definitely is just an added stress, regardless of when it happens. Yeah, I don't know. It's a funny aspect of the game for sure. But
also going to that Zwift Transparency, that was a good move from the community. That was a community started thing. But the problem started to happen because there was too many call outs and people calling like each other out and just like pointing fingers. That's why like Zada, which is like let's call it like the USADA of WADA of Zwift Racing, stepped in to limit that, because then it got really unhealthy. I mean, you saw a fair amount of hilarious waiters, like guys using bricks and etc. So I mean, that was the funny side of it. So
so what about doubling down on transparency? Isn't there also a double recording as well? Don't you need to have two different power devices?
Yeah.
Are there specifics on that as to what you can have?
Yeah, yeah,
I'll go on, Alex. Well, from my point of view, it's the smart trainer you're using is the one that records the power on the Zwift platform. And then you record your power meter, whether it's crank-based or pedal, on your head unit, like Garmin or Wahoo. And then after the race, you upload that. And then you've got two power readings, and they have to be within a certain percentage of each other. So
percentage unknown, but whatever is acceptable.
I think it's 3 to 5%. No,
it's 5 to 7%.
Five to seven.
Yeah, Zada does not specify, but everyone has their. Alex might know, having maybe worked with them before, but they don't specify.
I think it was mentioned somewhere that it's 5 to 7%, because again, it depends like from like trainer to trainer. But I think Josh's question was also if you are limited to equipment choices, so like certain brands, right? So as of now, yes, you are limited. So like for, let's use Tax, you can only use the Neo and I think the Flux 2 model, and then Elite is just like Diretto and above, and Wahoo is kicker core and kicker. In the latest version.
And the Saris H3.
Yeah, and Saris H3. So like though you can basically for the top end racing, you can only use like the premium models, no wheel on trainers allowed. because like wheel on trainers tend to be the least accurate, and you can manipulate them the easiest, so to say, but I'm not going to go into details.
And what about, is heart rate data, is that necessary as well?
Yeah,
it needs to be on both your in-game for 95% of the race and on your dual recording as well. You can use the same heart rate strap for both. They allow that, but your power has to be a separate device.
Now, is there, does anybody, the trainer bikes, like I think Wahoo has one. I don't know if there's another one I read. Is there an advantage or disadvantage, or is that just the same thing as using like a, you know, a kicker disadvantage. Trainer?
Disadvantage, because like, let's say if you use your bike, there are riders who will even triple record. So like they will have multiple power devices on one bike. With that bike, you're basically limited just to like the sole power source, which is the trainer itself. And then you have to buy pedals because you cannot mount a crank or whatever on it.
And also just the way those, I mean, it's every rider's going to get the feel and get used to riding their trainer. Like there's definitely an art to each trainer, has, it's going to have different tendencies. And that knowing how to ride each trainer correctly is going to be a real difference maker in how you're able to play. And also, you know, so those bikes, I don't know a ton about them. I've ridden the kicker bike once, and it felt pretty good. It's kind of cool. It's got adjustable crank lengths. But you know, it's going to be very rider dependent. I don't know if there's an advantage or disadvantage other than maybe you could set the kicker bike up. So you really, I mean, out, if you're using an outdoor bike, like that bike, it's slammed in the front end because it's an outdoor bike and it looks good that way. And that's not necessarily like the highest power producing way. If you put maybe like a 90 mil stem and a big stack on there, you can get a more, maybe a little bit more power out of your setup if you have it set up indoor specific.
Yeah, I got one just on that. Oh, sorry. Just on that, Patrick, on that setup thing. So I use two bikes on Swift. So I use my road bike and I use my TT bike. Mm. I use my TT bike, and because of the position I'm in, I'm gaining 15, 20 watts already just because of the position I'm in.
There you go.
That's interesting. That was my final tech question, and I want to get into racing. But if you guys have dedicated indoor bikes, and if it's set up differently, and if you can use a TT bike, if that's allowed in the racing series.
Everything is allowed.
Could use a mountain bike. You could use whatever you want. Yeah. I'm on a dedicated indoor bike. Well, pretty much indoor. I hardly ride outdoors anymore. But yeah, it's set up, and like, for example, chain ring selection. Like Patrick was saying, your stem, your bars, everything is set up to optimize indoor, and again to work well with your trainer that you have and just your physiology.
All right, let's get into racing here a little bit. I want you guys to break down, say you're going into a race, what's the strategy like? Are you guys talking about course? And then Russ, I want to hear your DS perspective from this as well. What's kind of the process going into a race?
Okay, so the first process is we decide what race we're doing, or in the Premier League, what race is coming up. And then through our phones or computers, we will talk about bike selection, who's feeling good, who's, you know, depending on the course. And then we there's a certain amount of tactics involved, obviously. And then we talk about what the other teams have been doing, how well they're going, who to look out for, who's feeling good on the day, who's going to do a stupid attack off the front so the guys that are feeling good can sit in as much as possible. So there's all sorts. Alex, to that.
Usually you say rule 5 and that's it. Like everyone knows what that means.
It means Russ is going to make us all puke today.
Yeah. I mean, so usually when me and Russ DS, like I was like more of the geeky side, the number side. Russ was there for So you have to know about Ken. He's in cycling. I say he's been in cycling since the Stone Age, because he's that old. So I usually just like get like the numbers and etc. because I know all the numbers of the guys like from the top of my head. And basically from my side, it was just like get them in the first 15 minutes. And once like the main part of the race started, like Russ took over and just screamed at him. Like Tom can also confirm here. I think Tom won it and Patrick was in the top 10 on a UCI Richmond course. I think you fainted or puked at the end, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That would have been season. I've definitely puked after some time trials. That race was hard. That was the season one Richmond where we ended on the climb. And
You won that one.
Yeah, I did win that one. And I think it was just, I remember Russ was calling it and he just told me to go early and I just trusted him. And I think it was so painful and was kind of like blacking out by the end, but just the adrenaline kicked in and you just figure it out. But I think part of being a DS is knowing when to push, knowing when to just let the riders do their thing. Because I think a lot of the times, especially Zwift, is all about timing, right? When you're going to make your finish or your attack. And a lot of people are sometimes overly conservative, and just hearing your DS tell you to go, even though you're like, I don't know, this feels early, usually works out for the best.
I mean, you have to know a bit of also about psychology. That's like where Russ comes in, because he has those years behind him, and just like, it's easy to know how and when to push the buttons of a rider. So like, let's say with me, he knows he can be rough. He can call me names. That will get me fired up. With another rider, it's completely different. You have to be more gentle. So it's, it's hugely psychological dependent, but just like, as Tom said, like you just need to trust him and just like go for it. And we all trust Russ's, his judgment. And whenever he called a shot, like be that in a team time trial, a normal race, whatever, just like we pulled it off in the end.
Yeah, the other thing, like Alex mentioned, with the psychology. So we would also DS the women's team. And I learned a lot in the first three or four races of what you can say and what you can't say. That was a big learning curve.
Likewise.
Big time. Different animal.
It makes a big difference when you have a DS versus not having a DS. Just someone, especially in time trials, but in races, to keep everybody cool, especially, you know, everybody for Premier League wise, everybody puts so much time and effort into preparing. You know, you get your Zoom stream up, you got to get your weigh in, you got to submit your dual recording. Everything's got to happen on a schedule. It's an hour race or a little less, but it is an all day process. It's brutal. It's very stressful. And you get wound up in a race. And if you don't have somebody to kind of bring you back down and keep you're just wasting energy. So the DS is helping you save energy when it counts and really giving you that extra percent when you really need it in the final. Another thing I think that's kind of cool about Zwift is it's kind of its own season of riding. You know, if you watch the World Tour and you watch the classics, like it's always the same 20 guys up there. And out of that 20 comes the same five or six. And those guys are remembering how everybody was racing last weekend and who's riding well, who's going. I mean, they know their own race in a different, just as we know regionally in the States. Like I know pretty much if I'm showing up to a top view race, I pretty much know who's going to be there, what the teams are going to be. And in the Zwift season, especially as we're getting now into it in earnest, it's middle of November. You're racing training races, you're racing weekend races, you're racing series, and you're racing the same people. Greg Leo, when I started, told me, he was like, you know, you just got to do O-crits, show up to a couple O-crits, and friend every single person who beats you on the companion app. And then you have this list of people, you're like, all right, these guys are hitters. And then you start knowing their names. And then all of a sudden, you're not just racing bots, you're racing people. You've seen their streams. And like, that's what it takes to get to understand this discipline, is it really takes, you got to invest. It's a couple of years it really takes to really, really get in there. And knowing your competition, that's what makes it real.
I can add also here, just like onto the DS side. So the DS also helps you, like gives you another pair of eyes, because usually Premier Division is like 100 riders, 80 to 100 riders. So you just cannot scroll with your mouse like to see what's happening on the front if you're in the back. So like with if you have two DSs, like one can watch the middle part of the bunch, and just like one can scope the front, what's happening. Or like if you have a breakaway, it's the same. One can watch the main bunch, one can watch the,
So elaborate on that a little bit. I wanted to ask, what is the DS looking at and where are they looking? What is that?
I mean, it depends. Just like usually... Go on.
Alex, is the other thing, while we're DSing and we've gone into the pen with the guys just to watch, that we also have Swift Power live. So we're seeing their stats. Obviously, sort of 30-second delay, but we're seeing what they're pushing out, their heart rates, where they're positioned. So you're looking at two screens and you're taking all that info in and trying to push that to the guys that, don't worry, you're all right where you are, stay where you are, chill out on the pedals. Or when you see it kicking off at the front and you see some spikes, you're like, guys, move up, move up, move up. Because once a big split goes, and this is very difficult, unless you've got a bigger group behind that are willing to push, you won't get back on.
Yeah. As a racer, the things I want to hear from my DS are, if there's anyone off the front and the time gap that they have, how big the group we're in. So like, if I'm drifting back, I know what numbers to watch for. So I don't get too far back or don't put myself in a bad position. Potentially who's left in the group. So who do I need to mark or watch for? And just things like that. So it's just another set of eyes, because I have quite a few things to worry about myself, how long's left in the race, my heart rate, my wattage, all that kind of stuff. So it's just basically a second or third set of eyes that's just helping you manage everything that's going on.
Every time, you know, so it's, let's say, you know, Tom's chilling 70th position and the race, you know, maybe like there's like 7-8 guys that are all pushing at the same time at the front of the race. He's not going to see that on his screen. He's not going to see that. He'll realize it's happening after a few seconds. But if you have a DS that's go, it's now, and they all of a sudden are able to adjust before there's that delay, that's a huge, huge help. That's a huge energy save, you know, mentally and physically. Those sort of things add up, especially in the premiere when it's just so fast the entire race. And to know, like, oh, this guy's off the front doing 7.5. It's like, no. He's 190 already. Heart rate. He's pegged. He's got 3 more minutes. He's blowing. So, like, you don't have to worry. He's like, oh, he's got 10 seconds. So it's like, he's done. You know, just to know that, have that assurance is really helpful.
I think that happened last year, actually, at one of the initial races. I'm not sure if it was the qualifying series or when the Premier Division actually started, like Tom was saying, like, oh, there's a guy off the front. And then just like Russ clicked on him. I was like, don't worry. Like he's already done. He was like max out, just like heart rate, like Patrick said, over 190. And then in the end, like Tom just took the win just because we kept him cool. Like, wait, you have 3Ks to go, unleash your attack, 1K to go. So,
hey, so let's talk about that. Can teams, I want to talk about the leagues too, but can, say your team, say Insured, can you guys kind of like bring in a dark horse of like that no one knows? Like, is that a thing, or is it, they have to be like?
No, riders have to be pre-regged like in advance. So a roster of 10 riders, it has to be in advance. You have to complete the power verification, weight verification. You have to complete a power test. Usually like in the past, it was a lap of the three sisters course. So like a 1 minute effort, around a 20 minute effort, 5 minute effort, and a sprint in the end. Now it's just like, I think 30 seconds, 1 minute, 7 minutes, 12 minutes, and I think two maximum sprints in the end, just on the top of my head. So it's a painful process just to get it done, but it's kind of like making a selection for a Grand Tour team. So it's all done in advance.
That makes sense. What's the league breakdown? I know you guys keep saying Premier League. Is that the top?
Yeah.
Yeah, the way Zwift's...
Go ahead.
Zwift created the Premier League as kind of an evolution of its elite racing program. And they did three seasons last year where there's a couple races left in the first season of this year. Oh, there's one race left. And there are also, so that's, how, Tom, is it 15 teams?
Right now we're at 20. Well, it was 20. And then with a merger, it dropped down to 19. But they are reducing it down to 12 next season. So there's basically, it's a relegation system in the Premier League just to keep fresh teams. So there's community leagues and Premier Leagues. And right now they're doing their biggest relegation. So seven teams are going to get relegated after this race. And what they'll do is they'll bring in, I believe, three new teams from the community divisions that earn a spot. So there's kind of, it's like exactly like the football or soccer leagues in Europe, where you can kind of move up and down depending on how well or how poorly you're playing.
Now, and you also said there's three, I guess, calendars or three schedules or three divisions. I know I'm not saying this right. Throughout the season, I guess three seasons.
Yeah. A season is six or seven races typically.
And do you guys need to participate?
They're weekly.
Do you have to participate in all of those?
Yeah. So unlike normal racing, or like, it's not single day racing, it's all overall points based. So like you can get a individual win, but your team can still not win if you don't acquire enough points. There's sprint races, sort of like, you know, so there'll be KOM points and then there'll be sprint points, and your team over the course of the race has to acquire enough points. It's very heavily weighted in the finish. But you have to acquire enough points to win overall. And then that overall score translates to a individual team score for each race. And that adds up race to race to race. And so the overall winner will have the highest score at the end of the season, at the end of all of the races being completed.
And is that season then, saying like a 12-month period, is there certain months where you guys are aiming for specifically? Like I'm saying, as like a training, can you like kind of like macro cycle this, or how does that work?
No, because there's not, that's the problem with Zwift, and like everyone is complaining over it. There's nothing known in advance. Like in the past, it was like, oh, the next season is starting in 10 days. It's like, oh, but I'm having my first road race in 10 days. It's a nightmare. I hope they figure out the system like going forward, so that there are like time periods. I think the next one is starting late January or February. Tom and Patrick should know better. But it's just schedule-wise, it's been a nightmare in the past. Like there was nothing known. You found out basically last minute. And just like going back to what Patrick said, I actually found myself in that scenario where we won every race, but because we didn't accumulate enough points, like from KOMs and sprints, we still didn't move up the division.
I think it's getting better. Yeah, I agree. Zwift has not been forthcoming with information, but it's getting better. Like right now we know like roughly the Zwift season is from October till probably the end of April. Like that's kind of key Zwift season. What they do in that time frame is a little bit unknown, whether it's two seasons, three seasons, whether we're going to have an esports world or we're not. Like all these things are kind of unknown and where things fall, but if you're training to be specifically racing on Zwift, you got to be ready for those months, just like a road rider would be kind of ready in the kind of reverse months, right? From May until end of September.
So how do you, during the season then, I'm thinking, and correct me here, I'm kind of thinking it's a comparison to like a cyclocross race. I mean, you guys are just going all out for the races are what, 60 minutes, 90 minutes, or do they vary there?
Vary. I mean, you have races at the weekend that can be also 2.5 hours long. But just like yeah, Tom knows which race I meant, but that's brutally hard. But like, let's see.
They're good.
I love them.
Hate them.
I do too. As long as it's not like Surrey Hills or something silly.
Or the 200 that we did in January, Arvas.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
200.
What's the shortest race? Are we talking like, is there a minimum there? Could it be 30 minutes?
Well, for Zwift Racing League, you're pretty much always hitting the 45 minutes to an hour time frame.
Yeah.
When we're talking about community races, you can have a race as short as, I don't know, Kirchmar race, 10K.
They're 10 minutes. Yeah. Sometimes 12 minutes.
Yeah, and then you have races as long as, like they were saying, 150, 200K sometimes. So community varies a ton, but they've kind of set the time frame that spectators want to watch no more than 45 to 60 minutes for kind of the sanctioned like higher level races. But other platforms are doing other things like Echelon Racing League. We had races that were close to 2 hours, so maybe closer to an outdoor, maybe even longer, some of them. So Zwift has kind of found a niche in terms of what they want, but I could see other platforms kind of adopting other styles and other races.
So then what does training look like on a typical week there? If you guys are racing, it sounds like possibly twice in like a 7-day period.
Oh, no, more easy.
Ask Tom.
So again, a typical training week in race season, it's a lot of racing. Like you kind of have to throw a training plan out the window, because off season, I'll do a structured training plan because I'm not going to race as much, if at all. Like I do take a break from Zwift racing because you could just kill yourself racing all year nonstop. So for example, last year, summer months, I did not race at all. Like my first race was kind of late October, late August, priming for an October start. But in season, I'll race 4 or 5 times a week. I typically look for kind of the big races. Like I'll do the Kiss Race Series or the Oh My Crits. Those are kind of the two bigger ones that I'll focus on and kind of vary the time of day. And then I'll typically pair that with some steady volume, kind of zone 1, zone 2, just to kind of get the volume up. So it varies for me. It's probably anywhere from 10 to 15 hours during race season. But off season, if I'm indoors, I'll do structured training inside and out anywhere, and typically more volume, maybe 15 to 20 hours a week.
Yeah, I did a lot of prep. Yeah, between the end of outdoor riding and indoor riding, I did a pretty heavy structure block. And since then, I'm maybe doing like one workout per week. And it really just depends. You have to kind of know, well, you have to pick races that suit your training load, which is very possible to do if you have a flexible enough schedule. So like this week, for example, it was team time trial week. So I did, and I've been doing 2 community leagues. So I've been doing like a early morning and then a midday on Tuesday, and Tuesdays have been doubles now for 6 weeks. And that's a pretty heavy day. Like that's a pretty tiring day. So I'm not going to do anything the following day, very, very light ride, typically, or, you know, endurance. Like, but this week with the time trials, it wasn't quite as sharp of an effort. So I had a little bit more in the tank yesterday. So I did an endurance ride. And then, so that's essentially a threshold over under workout. So I know I'm not going to need to do, maybe I'll get some more threshold on the weekend if I'm doing Oh My Crit or Kiss. And then, but I want to keep my sprint sharp. So yeah, then you do a Kirchmar race or two, and then a double Oh My Crit, which is like maybe 20 minutes of tempo with some spikes, and then you know, sprint practice at the end. So you're getting a lot more sprint practice in season. So you're recovering and sprinting and recovering and sprinting.
I mean, it also depends from rider to rider. So like I personally never approached it as Tom or Patrick do. So because I'm primarily a road rider, so I just like did it for fun, except during COVID I went wild. But I mean, now working with riders who specifically do Zwift racing, it just depends from person to person and what they want to do. I mean, just like in general, it's like Tom said, like the top riders will train through the summer more endurance based, build that base up. It's kind of like in the end, it's kind of like cyclocross. You train through the summer months, build up that aerobic fitness, and then just go into racing and race until April and then call it quits, recover.
Until you can't.
I think all three of us like found out on their own skin how it is to be fried by Zwift racing.
If you get hooked on Zwift and you get hooked on the racing, guaranteed within 2-3 months, you're gone. Yeah. You're finished.
Yeah. It's like starting racing for the first time. It's like, or you're just starting training. I didn't have that feeling since like maybe my very first winter. It's like first 12-hour week ever. And then like the next week you're like, I am so cracked. And you know, it's getting deep into Zwift reminded me of that early feeling of like, whoa, I've never done anything like this to myself.
And it's day in, day out. We've all done it. We're on there 7 days a week, or used to be. And now we're all a bit more clued up and what's required and what you need to do yourself to get where you want to. But when you first get into it, because I, from a shop point of view, when I sell a smart trainer, I will offer them to come around and set it up for them and go through the stuff they don't know on the computer or whatever, iPad, just to set up certain stuff for them that they don't realize themselves. And they come in a week and it's like, I'm on it every day. The wife's murdering me and stuff like that. It is that addictive.
Russ, but to be fair, I mean, now we're all a bit more mature and like we know how to control ourselves, like speaking for all four of us. Because yeah. you yourself for a period went wild and Zwift and was racing on it every day. Oh. But it's just like you come to a certain point where you hit a limit. I found out last year where that limit was. And to be fair, the only way you learn is by burning yourself. Like that's just how life works.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you guys obviously have been doing this a long time. So people getting into this, I got two questions for you. What are some tips and tricks you guys have with your setup? Like whatever that is, you know, I'm sure it's like fans and towels and stuff, but anything specific that you guys find that helps you? And then if people want to start racing, where's a good place to start?
I would say on setup, a decent computer, not one of these cheap things you get, you know, and just jack straight into your router.
Yeah, that's the most important thing. Don't use Wi-Fi.
Don't use Wi-Fi. Just wire
everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless you're using Mac-based products like Bluetooth, Wi-Fi are a lot better on those. Again, higher end the better, because there are some Mac products that wouldn't get the same kind of enjoyment out of gameplay. But yeah, wire everything. Like, it's kind of a mess, but it makes a huge difference. Lots of fans. I use 3 fans. Keep it cool if possible. Like, I think that's a big turnoff for a lot of new riders. They'll just get on the trainer without any fan in a hot room. And after 30 minutes, they'll be just completely exhausted and drenched and hate it because that was me at the beginning too. The first ride I ever did, no fan, nothing. And just, I wondered how people were able to do this. So yeah, use fans, and then obviously towels are important. I sweat a lot. Well, Patrick can attest to that, but yeah, just so you don't destroy your house or your bike, protect that stuff with towels.
Also avoid, yeah, also avoid Bluetooth and use Ant Plus, just because I know there's a big boom like with Bluetooth. Like people think it's the best thing for Zwift racing, but Bluetooth is like has multiple channels when you connect it, and just like Ant Plus works in a way it's only in and out. So it's like a let's call it like a two-way channel, and you don't use any other Ant Plus signal except for your power meter, trainer, and heart rate at your home. Like no one does. With Bluetooth, our phones have Bluetooth, our laptops, maybe your neighbor has Bluetooth, and it will interfere. So in my opinion, bin off Bluetooth, except if you're on your tablet, and just use Ant Plus. It's the safer way. Oh, and also, like Tom mentioned, get a few meters of USB cable and put that dongle as close to the trainer and power meter as possible.
Definitely. Oh, and another tip is don't wear your best cycling shoes while swifting.
Oh, yeah.
Because you will ruin them. Because like Tom says, you sweat so much. You get off that trainer, it's like you've been swimming. That's how wet you are. Mm-hmm. And usually, if it's over an hour's hard racing, like an hour and a half, one of the big races, like the Kiss on the Sunday, is you basically strip off as the kilometers tick by. Your top coat, it's like, and you're toweling yourself, and yeah, you won't believe how much sweat. It's crazy.
And I think what goes hand in hand with that is proper nutrition and hydration. Like I always have, if I was going to do a Kiss, I'd have five water bottles beside my bike with electrolyte or sports drink with a couple gels. Like you're going to burn crazy amounts of energy. So fuel properly, like every kind of 15 to 20 minutes or every 30 minutes, you got to be making sure you're getting fuel.
I found with the big races, the long races, the two and a half hour races, when SIS brought out that beta fuel with the 80 grams of carbs, that makes a massive difference. One of those an hour with a gel of an extra 30 grams of carbs makes a huge difference. I know it's a lot of carbs, but it helps.
SIS also has those, I think they're indoor specific gels, which I haven't looked into. I don't know if you guys have tried those.
I sell them in the shop. It's menthol.
So it has a cooling effect then, right?
Yeah, but I'm not keen on menthol. So
drinking menthol. I tried it.
I wear menthol. I don't drink it.
And then also like one tip we have to add in, if you're serious about it, just like invest in a aluminium frame or something, just because I think all three of us found ourselves destroying all our bearings. At least I did. Like I even Russ knows the story. I basically snapped off my handlebars in a sprint because like everything was destroyed on my bike.
Yeah, that's the biggest mistake I see from a lot of people. They'll leave their bike on the trainer all winter and they don't do any maintenance. Like I'm doing maintenance on my bike once a week, cleaning it up. I wax my chain, so I'll do that every week. Like you got to take really good care of your bike indoors and your trainer. Like these things do require maintenance if you want to get kind of the best performance out of them.
I've had a customer come in that he uses his road bike for racing, but he puts it on the trainer for winter. And he came in, you couldn't turn the bars. They were completely seized. And it ended up just being a bike for the trainer because I couldn't get the forks out of the frame. They were seized that much from his sweat. Crazy. And it was an expensive bike.
Yeah, you got
my bike. That was my bike, if you remember. Like,
yeah,
same story. I just snapped my handlebars off.
Yeah, I think having some towels is key. I'm guilty of leaving my bike on a bit too longer on the trainer, and I snapped a stem bolt when trying to make an adjustment. And you learn the hard way. So just cover. You're gonna sweat a lot more than you think.
I mean, you can buy those covers also from Tax or from Elite. It's just like, I think you put them, you snap them on your handlebars and your seat post, and that should do the job. But just like washing your bike every few days, or once a week.
Yeah, like Tom says, maintenance on the bike once a week, good to go. Definitely.
So and what clean about it. Changing gears here a little bit? We're talking courses. Do they? Because I know Zwift is always releasing. Well, not always, but they have new worlds and new routes. Do you guys have new courses quite often, or is there kind of like those core courses you guys do? How does that work?
I think the courses out there, we've all ridden them. When a new course comes out, like the Macora Island, have you guys raced on that yet?
Nope.
It's two races Premier League this season, actually.
Okay. They're quite a little lumpy. They say it's a flat island, but it's not.
No.
It is, you know, those little 20, 30 second hits when everyone's pushing. As soon as a new course comes out, and I think a new one is being added to the Macora Island, a bit like Hong Kongish, a bit like Richmond, I think, but sort of flat for crits. Everyone will jump on them and you'll go and ride them and you'll just find out where the elevations are, the descents are, where it's flat, the distance, because it's like anything. When you're going to a race, the things you check, who's racing, so you know how they race, so you're aware of what might possibly happen, and the course itself. If you're going into a course like on Swift and you've never done that course before, you're basically riding blind, so you don't know what's coming up. You're not anticipating anything. So if there was a 30 second ramp coming up that averaged 5% and you're not aware of it, because of the way the trainers are delayed to a certain extent, you want to put that power down before you actually get there. So when you're on the ramp, you're on your power and you're moving. Yes, guys?
Now also with YouTube, Twitch, and etc., you don't really need to do it, but it's good that you feel out the course, because there is an element of feel, just like Russ said. Because, like, let's use the Premier Division for an example. You have to keep your trainer at 50% difficulty. That means resistance will feel 50% from what you would feel outside. So usually the top racers tend to race between 30 and 15%, some even lower. Depends on the trainer they use, because some trainers will hit back you differently. Now with YouTube and those websites, you can just like type in a race and you're bound to find something, so you can just watch a recon. You don't have to do it. But for top level racing, it's still a good idea just to feel it out.
Yeah, I'll race it multiple times and watch finishes over and over and over again to get my timing down. Alex, I spend way too much time doing that.
the trainer difficulty, you had said it has to be at 15%, but people can adjust it.
50, 50, 50.
But you can go down from that if you want to?
The Premier Division, no, it has to be set at 50%. Like we in our team, so I was teammates with Tom and Patrick before. We had also riders disqualified for that and received warnings for that. It has to be 50%, no exceptions. For community level, you can do whatever you want. I tried it at 100%, but I guess it depends from trainer to trainer. So Tom uses, and I think you use the Neo, I don't know what you're using now. That thing, if you put it on 100%, will slam at you like a truck is hitting you. You can't pedal basically. Yeah. Because on Zwift, people prefer, so on Zwift, low cadence is a thing. And the top riders tend to ride at extremely low cadences. I don't know, like Tom, if you just check his streams or like his data, his cadence is really low, but that works with Zwift Racing. So if you try to do that with a Neo on 100%, you're going to break your legs, basically.
Your lower back.
Yeah.
Alex, I didn't know about the low cadence, because on Zwift, I use the Neo and I have it at about 30%. And I usually average between sort of 95 to 105 cadence. I'll have to play with that.
I raced at about 65 average.
No!
You didn't know.
Me too.
Oh my God, that's grinding.
I stand maybe 30-50% of the time.
Oh wow.
I like it so that you can respond better. If you get out of the saddle and you have basically you're riding 90, you have to change gears to get the resistance, right? So if you have a heavy gear, when you stand up or you sprint to respond, you're going to have that resistance to push against. So for me, it's a tactical thing so that I can always make the move that I want and get out of the saddle as needed. So I'll kind of sacrifice. And to be honest, from a physiological standpoint, I find it more efficient because I can keep my heart rate down a little bit more.
I mean, it just depends, like, from rider to rider. Like, you have, like, Lionel Ruiz in, he will spin 100, even 110, 115 RPM if you watch his streams. You have Tom on the... So, Lionel is a top-level swifter. Tom is a top-level swifter. Tom will grind. Lionel will spin. So, there's, like, multiple points of view which fits a rider. But here's where traditional road riders struggle with. Majority of road riders will spin between, let's say, 75 to 90 RPM, and then you come onto Zwift and that doesn't work anymore. So like then you are, oh, how do I race now, you know? So when you put it into a simple perspective, Zwift racing isn't for everyone, and it requires some adaptation.
I want to go back to something you said, Tom, about like watching videos or reconning courses and seeing like for the sprint where you need to go, timing things. I'm sure there's also, can you guys use the, I want to say boosters. I know that isn't the right word. The power-ups. Can you use those in the races?
So some races have them, some don't. And it really changes the dynamics of the race. Zwift has decided that all their kind of sanction events are going to have power-ups, which again, I'm totally fine with. It's a video game. But at the end of the day, that changes a lot. Like for example, the aero power-up is one of the kind of favorite ones to have going into a finish. You get, a lower CDA for 15 seconds. I don't know exactly what it does, but basically makes your avatar go faster for 15 seconds. So knowing that and where to use that and when to start your sprint is going to be very different than if I didn't have that power up. So it's a dynamic that really changes the racing. It's something you need to practice. So you got to find races that have power ups if you want to practice that. And, but the hard thing is it's kind of a 50-50 split. So, like, for example, the Oh My Crit races will never have any power-ups. So it might be the course you're looking for, but then when you add in power-ups, it's almost a completely different race or a different finish, at least, than if you are using them. So just something to consider when you're doing your recons.
Or Kiss Race is the same. Kiss Race is the same, huh?
Yeah.
And the power-ups, there's how many is there? Seven, eight?
Yeah.
So you've got to know how each one works.
Yeah, but also, Russ, you have to take in. So as the new rules, like as they change rules, so for the top level races, I'm not sure how that works with the community now. You have limited power ups per race, so it's not a guarantee that you're going to have all seven or eight of them available. Yeah. Sometimes it can be just two or three.
Yeah. So it's just knowing when to use those power ups. It's like, it's no good coming into like a KOM climb and everyone wants a feather because that's the best and you end up getting the truck. So you may as well just use that at the start. Like Tom said, it's a game.
So I would imagine then there as the DS or as the communication going on the team, you guys are probably all talking about who has what power up, who should go for this sprint point or KOM.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So what about for tactics? Is it kind of similar to road racing where you can see a solo rider or a group go early on? Or the courses that you guys have done a lot, do they kind of always play out in the same way with a sprint? How does that work?
It depends.
95% of the time, it does come down to a sprint of usually the stronger riders but able to keep the power on, stay with that group. When it splits, there could be, what, 10, 15, 20 of you? Something like that. And then it's just knowing who's in that group and who, because like I said before, when you're watching Swift Power as well as the race, you've got all their top-end sprints, so you know who the sprinters are. So to, I know it sounds funny, but like you say, get on Lionel's wheel or get on Gardner's wheel or Brandt's wheel or whatever. And it usually somehow sort of you end up getting near that pixel of that person coming into the last 500 meters. And then I found watching the guys, it's usually in a sort of bunch sprint. You hit, if a power up is available, you hit that at 300 meters and you start hitting it. Would you say, Tom, something like that?
Yeah. I'd say anywhere from 300 to 400 is probably kind of your average. I think in Premier League, you might hit a little earlier, packs going faster, but I would say kind of you want to time it so it runs out right as you cross the finish line.
Exactly.
Yeah, but also like then you have to take in your own strengths and weaknesses. So let's say I'm a weak sprinter, I'm going to use it as late as possible. Like you're a stronger sprinter, you can use it a bit earlier because like you're going to build that peak power up, or Patrick the same. So it's just like depending on what kind of rider you are. But yeah, I mean, tactics wise, with the new dynamics, a breakaway can go, but if the pack is doing 5 watts per kilo average, then the rider at the front has to do 6 or 6.5. I mean, there's not many riders who can do 6.5 watts per kilo for 40 minutes. There are a few of them, like Leonard Togels being one of them. He tends to like ride away just because that fits him. Or like Tommy also did a breakaway a few times. But there's not many riders currently at the top level who can do that. So sometimes a break does go, but it has to be the right move of the right teams also. So in a way, it is similar to road racing, but then again, it's not.
Well, and at the end of the day, it's not about the, as I guess at least the Swift Racing League, is not about the finish line. It's not the end all of the race. So like you'll have guys attacking in the middle of the race and getting up the road to scoop intermediate points fairly frequently. And then, you know, it's the late race attack. I mean, most bike races come to sprints. That's just, be it online or in real life, there's always a couple people sprinting at a line. Like it's just the most typical. And the draft is very, very powerful in the game.
Yeah.
It's improved.
Yeah, the new dynamics are pretty cool.
It is.
Speaking of the new dynamics, is the dynamics up in Watopia now?
I think it's everywhere.
Two weeks ago.
Yeah, I think it's everywhere. Cool. Yeah, it's everywhere. I mean, I did ride with the Pacer board a few days ago, and it's like if you ride in the middle of the pack now, it's a lot easier. Like it feels a lot more like roadish, like as you would outside. Yeah.
So what is this you guys are talking about?
It's basically Zwift updates its algorithm. So before, riders will just like go through one another. But now when you see riders, it's kind of like on the road. It will just like the rider won't go through you. It will go beside you like you would, like gaps would open up. Yeah,
it's a lot better.
Yeah, it's a lot better. But just like in the past, like drafting. So now drafting changed. In the past, if you sat on the back, you could get off with such a low power. I mean, I finished races in the top 5, top 10 by doing like 2.5 watts per kilo last wheel. But now it's that sweet spot comes more in the middle to the front.
Wheel sucker.
Yeah, the way I learned it was like James Hodges, who took me on to Swift Power. I got fed up getting dropped by him, so I used to stalk him when he raced to see how he races and how he does it. That's how I learned how to draft, just by stalking James.
Speaking of racing, are we going to make the 4 minutes to Okrit start?
No.
I think I can make it.
Okay, Josh, another thing about Swift that when newbies come on and enter their first race, the start. Now, the start is a completely different concept to the way when you're out on the road. You know, like you just roll off from the start and then the flag goes down. Well, from the perspective of Swift, when you're in the pen and it's counting down, I wish you could see a video of every single rider in their home trainer with those 5 seconds going down, because it, you're like, you're riding at 200 watts and you just go bang. Uh-huh. And you're up to 8, 9, 10 watts per kilo for like 20, 30 seconds.
Or more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you guys have a set number that you're going for? Like this wide?
No, you just go as hard as you can.
Just go as hard as you can. Okay.
Yeah.
Free, it's 15 seconds free energy, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's just like sometimes if it's a really hard course and if the competition is really stacked, you're just like, I know Russ like pointed the question once to us, are you guys still alive? Because like for the first 10, 15 minutes, we were all shut. Like usually we just, it, there is some chatter, but just like, guys, are you alive? No, what just happened? So yeah, that's how Zwift racing works in a nutshell. It's really, really hard. So you have to be really strong.
With it being a game, are there any specifics of tactical things like game wise of like that you guys, you know, use or have understood or have learned outside of the power-ups? Because I know the power-ups are truly a game, but I'm saying like maybe it's a tactical thing or whatever it could be.
Oh, there's
yeah, like, yeah, go on, Tom. Sorry.
Yeah, I would say there's quite a bit. I would say things like on a downhill, if you stop pedaling, you can go into a super tuck. You have to be above a certain speed, and the gradient has to be a certain slope. But like again, a seasoned racer will know like how to effectively use a super tuck to save energy. Again, kind of going back to the pack dynamics, drafting is a huge thing, and just being able to conserve your energy and knowing how to move in and out of the pack. So if you are going to make an attack, kind of where in the pack you start from, again, all kind of things, understanding the game and kind of the algorithm. I think there's also kind of things that were touched on earlier, knowing your trainer and your equipment, and how that responds in game is another piece to that as well. So I think those kind of things are just only learned through practice and being on the platform. I don't think you can just start up and kind of know all the tricks. It's just practice. And like Alex and other people said, watch videos, watch your favorite riders, see what they're doing, see how they kind of move around or how they kind of approach a race. Because there's a lot of people who are very skilled at the game. They might not necessarily be the strongest riders, but they are extremely skilled in knowing the game, timing, like when to launch, where to draft, all those things. And it just becomes, again, a lot more effective than just trying to kill yourself the whole race.
Yeah. I find as well, I look on the right-hand side of all the riders and see what per kilo they're pushing out all the time. Because every now and then you'll see an orange number. And if you see that with a certain rider, you know that guy's going to attack because you know that rider and how he rides. So you follow that as such. And the next thing you know, you're off the front with this guy and he's pulling the watts and you're doing a watt less. So you're saving energy and then all of a sudden there's a gap. And then you'll see other riders trying to come across, because they can see what riders are going to affect this ride. Yeah, that's another tactic.
Do they do any races? I think there was something on Zwift that was employed recently where you can hide, you can just see your avatar. Are there any races where they do that, where you can only allow you just to see the avatar?
They used to.
But they were stupid. Some people might have liked it. It's not the game. That's not the game. The game is, you know, part data collection. And I mean, and they didn't even tell you where the finish line banner was. So they do custom finishes and you don't even know where you are on the course or where the finish is actually going to be. And it's like, that's not really a race. It's just kind of a, group ride, like a stick in the road. Yeah, like.
Yeah, but I mean, just like, I mean, the game has to stay as it is, because at the end of the day, Zwift, RGT, whatever, esports, is not road cycling, it's not cyclocross, it's not mountain bike. It's a completely unique discipline, and it has a time and a place in cycling. And what I love about it, like, put this in perspective. Russ is in Jersey in the UK. Thomas from Canada lives in Nashville. Patrick is also in Nashville. They're all my friends. I met him how through Zwift. So that's the part I love about it, because I managed to build like my friendships all around the world because of it. And also because it's accessible, it's safe for people. Like, not everyone wants to break their neck in a road race. And just like, it's plug and play, hop on the train and then you go.
Yeah, it's a social platform as much as anything, I would say. Like the top tier guys like Tom and Patrick that race, there's not a lot of these guys and girls on Zwift that are at that level. Most level is, you know, the amateur cyclist, the person that's trying to get fit, you know. And like on some of the group rides, the chat, that's the other thing. You can actually chat while you're cycling, either typing, or you can go on Discord, like what we're sort of doing now, and talk to people. And that's the social side of it. That's where Zwift really is. That's their monetary side of it.
Yeah, sure. I think that's a challenge. I think that's where if the platform or kind of the community can do a better job of kind of humanizing the sport a little bit more, I think it'll really help evolve and make it more legitimate. Because I think sometimes when you're just seeing a game and you can only type, you can't hear their voice, you can't see them, it's easy to accuse someone of cheating. But if there's a way to kind of humanize the sport a little bit, add in maybe voice into the game, or other things like that, or have forums where maybe you can kind of chat after the race, just like you would in the parking lot after a road race, I think it would totally change the atmosphere and the dynamics. Because I know there's a lot of people who are skeptical of esports, but I think if you knew the people and you could see them, I think it would totally change that attitude.
I mean, for the top level, like, there have been tournaments and you had to go through a like whole verification process. Now with COVID, it's a bit different, but like for the, again, Premier Division, you have to you have to record yourself on the video you do. So when you complete the performance verification, everything has to be on video. And also for the races, like every rider has to get on a Zoom call and just so that he's visible, he or she is visible during the race, so that they can use it for like broadcasts. But like as Tom said, for the open community races, there's still a lot of like sketchy things happening. So from that point of view, yeah, I agree. There should be something done in that way, that it's more it's easier to prevent cheating from happening, because at the end of the day, people will cheat on Zwift just like in any sports athletes will dope that to gain an alpha.
I think it's not just negative. It's not just about cheating. It's the negative responses that people can actually say on Zwift. But that's another tool with your companion app. You can flag a certain rider for, if you think they're cheating, which is called a flyer, bad language, stuff like that. So that's quite a good thing. I think on the Premier League side of top tier racing is the only way of going forward with this on any platform at top tier is live events. Yeah. So imagine you're in a stadium with 10,000 people watching you. You could be in a velodrome or whatever. They've done it in Paris. Is all the guys and girls are on the same trainer. They get weighed there and then before they go in. And then the adjudicator puts in their weight and their height. And then they jump on the bike.
I mean, they had an attempt in the UK where UK nationals were broadcasted live on national television in London, in a certain arena. But that kind of also ended tragically, like with the winner eventually being disqualified due to
manipulation
because he used a bike he didn't obtain by the rules. So
but he still won the race.
Yeah, but he still won the race fair and square. But I mean, it's still like it's still a working process. Like it's still gonna take a few years. But I think things are moving in the right direction.
Does that take away from, like you said before, Alex, like one of the nice things about Zwift is you are in Slovenia. These guys are in Nashville. You know, I'm saying people can be around the world and be racing at the same time. What's the balance there, you know?
Again, I think they've made leaps and bounds to do what they can from remotely. Again, I think we'll still see improvements over the next couple of years. I'm sure there'll be trainers and other things or like a scale that they send to everybody, or I don't know, there's going to be technology improvements because I think their live races are going to be important. I think like the big kind of top tier races, maybe like the UCI esports world, that should be live, right? But the average community race and the premier season doesn't need to be live every race. But I think there are certain events that, especially where big prize money is on the line, definitely the only way to make sure everything is controlled is in a live stadium. So I think we're going to see technology advances that allow us to legitimize the sport remotely. But I think it's going to be a balance of, because again, that's the whole point why we love it. We don't have to travel to go and do these things. If you had to get on a flight every week to go do a Zwift race, I don't know, it would probably suck a lot of the enjoyment out of it unless that's what you love doing.
So you know what I'm curious of? So I think that, like you said, I think you hit the nail on the head there, Tom, like having some live events, that would be really cool. But how would you feel as a racer if, say, you're traveling to whatever XYZ country and using a different trainer? Would that be fine with you? Or do you kind of have some pause on that?
Me specifically, I've used pretty much every trainer. So I'm pretty familiar with everything. And if again, every event had different sponsors and different trainers, it would be the responsibility of the racer to familiarize yourself with that equipment. It does make it challenging, but it's at least it's a level playing field for everyone that we're all on the same thing. So yeah, it's going to be an advantage if you own that one or that's your favorite trainer, but, and it's all part of the game. And the other thing is you put 100 trainers in the room, they're all going to read slightly different. It's flawed technology. These were never designed to race on. I think there's also kind of progress to be made there.
Guys, this was awesome. We've chatted for a while here. Thank you. I have one last thing, and we don't have to go into in depth on this, but I meant to ask this earlier. Rocker boards. What's your guys' stance? Have you guys used those? Is that good, bad?
Never used one.
No, neither.
I've never used one either.
Yeah, I'm kind of the other way. I like my bike to be as like stiff as possible. Like I weigh my trainer down. I want as little movement as possible. Like for example, like a Tax Neo, there's some wobble in the trainer, and even in the new Wahoo, they have legs that allow for different. You can adjust it, but I like to keep my trainer like as rigid as possible because I find for the way I've learned how to ride indoors, it's just my ability to put down more power.
I don't see a point of it because at the end of the day, you're inside. It's going to be a pain in the ass to move it and to just like put it in because those things are heavy. And then just to like learn how to actually sprint on it. Just like Tom said, every top level racer weighs down the trainer. Everyone.
They do.
Like you can see guys using weights up to 100 kilos. So, I mean, that doesn't make, from my perspective, it doesn't make any point in using that. There is a certain team on Zwift that uses it because they're sponsored by Cyrus. So Cyrus makes those boards. So maybe for them it works. I guess it's individual, I guess. For me, it's pointless.
Well, thank you guys all again. We'll chat. I want to get your link. So if people want to connect with you or watch your races, we'll put that in the show notes. Yeah. Thank you guys. I really appreciate this. We'll have to do another one. We'll have to do a little catch up and see how the next league goes.
No spam email, please.
If you want to email anybody, please email Alex. That's what he said.
No spam email, please.
All right. Well, thank you guys.
Thank you guys.
Good to see you, Ross.
Good luck with the racing.
See you guys.